Welcome to episode 17 of Comic News Insider, the podcast for everything comic book and animation. We're your host, Joe.
And Julio.
What's up?
What's going on? Today's podcast is a special interview with Kyle Baker.
Just for you special fans out there.
That's right. So we had a chance to sit down with Kyle and chat about a few titles, one of which is one of his newest titles that is out now, Nat Turner, which is quite good. If you haven't had a chance to read it, make sure you go check it out. It's got some really good stuff based on a true story. And
hopefully you know from your history book.
That's right. What else did we chat about?
The Bakers.
The Bakers?
Yeah, his home family life.
That's correct. We had a chance to see the newest issue, right, as it came. He just dropped it off of the printers, and we had a chance to see the original art, so that was cool. And talked about the industry.
As a whole.
Yep.
And hopefully you won't be too distracted by the ambient sound, because we did something special that time.
That's true. We were having our interview in a New York diner. Where else to have a good interview?
Yep.
Lunch and microphones.
Hopefully we'll edit out the bad parts.
Well,
you know, clanging.
Clanging
and waiters interrupting us.
In mid question.
Yep.
Well, it was fun anyway.
He's a cool guy.
Yep, good stuff. So, here it is, interview with Kyle Baker. Enjoy it.
Eat hearty.
Joining us on today's podcast is Kyle Baker, whose work includes King David, Plastic Man, and Nat Turner.
Yes, hello. Great to be here.
Kyle, thanks so much for joining us. Now, we will preempt this by saying we're at a diner, sitting down.
And someone just put my coffee in front of me, which is why I paused.
So we get a chance to sip, drink, and hear a clinking of glasses behind us.
See, and that thank you is for the man who brought me the coffee,
That's
not
right.
for you.
Yeah, it's total New York experience here going on.
So, Kyle, I wanted to start off talking a little bit about Nat Turner. Tell us, if you could, a little bit about really the back history, how the story came about, what inspired you to put it into comic book form.
Oh, okay. Well, do you mean the backstory of
well,
how I came up with it? Or?
Sure, where, how it got to you and putting
it. Yeah, well, the Nat Turner story, I wanted to do a Black History comic, and I've always wanted to do one. And basically, I picked Nat Turner because it had the most fights. When I pick stories for comic books, I always pick the ones that have the most fights. Like when I did a Bible story, I picked King David because it's got a lot of action. Also, that it hasn't been done to death.
Right.
You know, like a lot of people have done Moses and a lot of people have done some of the other stories. You know, King David you haven't seen a million times. And the same thing with Nat Turner. It just hasn't been done as much as, say, Harriet Tubman. Or I don't think I've ever actually seen, like, a Nat Turner story.
Yeah, in any form.
So that was why I picked it.
Right.
Because it is a famous name. I usually try to pick subjects that have some appeal beyond having to know who I am. Like if I show you a book and you don't know who I am, but if it's about Alice in Wonderland or Nat Turner or King David, you might buy it anyway because you've heard of those topics.
Yeah.
Right. So that's
sure.
That's why I like doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I bought into King David.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, yeah. You don't have to have ever read anything I did.
And I was surprised. I was like, what? A comic? King David? What?
See, and that's another thing. A big part of these things is the novelty. You know, people will be interested in something just because, you know, you've heard the King David story 3 million times or,
right.
Nat Turner, but, you know, I haven't ever seen a comic book with slavery and stuff like that.
I thought it was, I mean, I loved it.
Yeah,
I'm really enjoying it.
You know.
And it's getting a lot of, actually, we spoke with Darwin Cook, and he said he just really blown away by it.
Yeah.
Really liked it. So, yeah, impressive. I like it a lot.
In terms of the stuff like that that you've done, how do you feel about the state of the industry as a whole? In terms of wanting to go out and do your own independent thing, and you've obviously been able to do it, but there might be some sort of blockade by the licensee characters and the big two. What are your thoughts about that? Like,
you mean blockade as far as where? Comic book stores? Or?
Is it an uphill battle for someone like you?
Well, I think it would be an uphill battle if I was doing these stories through Marvel or DC. I've just found over the years, and I love working with Marvel and DC, and you know, done tons of stuff with them, so I'm not burning any bridges here.
No.
But there's certain types of books that it doesn't help you to be on the shelf next to Superman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, no, if you've got an action story or science fiction story or something, then those are the guys for you, and you know, they know what the hell they're doing with Plastic Man, and they put it right there in the section where Plastic Man fans would hang out, you know.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you read Batman, you might want to read Plastic Man, but if you read Batman, you not really want to read a story about my family or, you know, funny kids or, you know, Black history or Bible story or something like that. What's that?
I beg to differ.
You like to get the mix of it.
I do like that kind of stuff. I just found that when I, you know, go to bookstore signings and stuff like that and meet readers, a lot of the people who read my stuff, the non-superhero stuff, the King Davids or the Why I Hate Saturns or You Are Here or something like that,
the
kind of books they like also are Dan Clowes. They'll say, oh, I love your books, and I read Dan Clowes' books, and I buy Hernandez Brothers and that sort of thing, and they don't really read the Justice League. And then people who read, you know, my Captain America book will be people who read Avengers and Thor and things like that, and aren't very interested in reading the other stuff.
So, with that then, since we're discussing a little bit about the self-publishing part of it,
right?
What are some of the plus and the minuses?
Well, the nice thing about the self-publishing is that I have the ability to go to places that DC or Marvel wouldn't be interested in selling it. Like something like Nat Turner has, in addition to selling in the comic book stores, it has appeal in educational markets, for example.
Mm.
And so,
yeah, I actually brought that up actually when we were reviewing it.
Yeah.
I thought it would be good if it were collected or put into like high school libraries.
Yeah, high school libraries. There's a lot of black colleges. There's a whole network of you know, United Negro, you know, and all that stuff. And it's the kind of stuff where if you talk to Marvel or DC Comics and say, oh, I think this section over here would buy a bunch of books, they would say, well, we're not really interested in that market, and you know.
Right.
Because I'm not the guy in charge of marketing, it wouldn't be right for me to go somewhere and sell books if they've decided not to sell them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there, you'll see books like, I always use this as an example, Suck Rubber Baby, which I don't know if you guys saw it.
Well, I haven't.
Okay, Howard Cruz, who's a very well-known gay cartoonist. He does stuff for like, I can't remember what papers, but like the gay papers. So he's very well known in that in that market. And he wrote a story about being gay in the 60s in the South when the civil rights movement was going on, and it was a very nice story. And it had appeal to sort of two different areas. There were people who might buy it because they're interested in the 60s civil rights era, and then there were people who might buy it because they're interested in his comics and you know, might have seen his stuff in, you know, the papers he works for.
Right.
But they never bothered to try and sell it to those two areas, you know, because there's no follow-up for them. That's another thing. Is, you know, there's no point in knocking on a door and trying to find a buyer, you know, when you don't have a follow-up for him. You know, he's going to buy 100 copies of Suck Rubber Baby, and then what else are you going to sell him? You got no, there's no other gay civil rights book for them.
But, so the self-publishing part, I guess, for you then, gave you the outlet to do independent or work that you really wanted to get out there yourself.
Yeah, because I'm willing to, you know, I've been known to drive all night to sell 100 books. You know, if some guy in Boston wants 100 books and wants to see me, or some school wants me to talk to him, I'll make the effort. Whereas, you know, if you talk to Marvel Comics, I know a place you can sell 50 books. They're not interested.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
So, I guess, I mean, you're working on, right now, I see some serious extremes when you go from, like, Nat Turner to Plastic Man.
Right, right.
As an artist, how do you prepare for, like, working in such with such different subject matter?
I guess a lot of it comes down to what's late. what's on the schedule.
Okay. But it is
tricky to shift gears from doing something really fun, you know, to go from doing Nat Turner, and then I think I went right from that to doing Plastic. I went from Nat Turner, and I had to do the next issue of Plastic Man.
Right.
And then after that, I had to do the Bakers, and then next week I have to do Nat Turner again. So I think it is a shift in gears, but I also think that if I did 4 issues of Nat Turner back to back, I would become horribly depressed.
Exactly.
Wow.
Because doing the research, I have to read all these depressing stories. I'm reading actual first-hand accounts of slaves and stuff during the Depression. The WPA, trying to keep writers busy, sent them out to talk to the surviving slaves, so there's about 100-year-old slaves that were still around.
Wow.
And so they told this, and you can find them on, I think, I'm going to get it wrong, but like Smithsonian website or something like that. They have them all.
Right.
Or Library of Congress or something. But they have, it's just hundreds and hundreds of horrible stories. Which,
yeah.
Okay, well,
so it's nice to lighten up with the Plastic Man the next week.
On the flip side, growing up or getting into what you were getting into when you were younger, was there any comic strip or comic book that influenced you to the point of becoming who you are today?
Yeah, when I was growing up, I really liked ghost comics and humor comics. One thing that I think is great about now, and there was maybe a 20-year gap where this wasn't true, when I was a kid, I have a brother and a sister, and we used to be able to go to the candy store, and all three of us would come out with comic books, and they were completely different types of comic books. I was never a big superhero fan. My brother really liked Jack Kirby superhero comics, and my sister liked Archie comics and Love comics and, you know, that kind of thing. And I liked Donald Duck. I liked funny stuff. I liked the Harveys and Donald Duck and Mad Magazine and Flop. There was a thing called Flop. Do you remember that one?
No, I don't know.
It was a DC version of Mad that had most of the same creators. It had Wally Wood and Sergio Aragonés and Basil Wolverton did all the covers and stuff.
Right.
And that was the kind of stuff I liked. And then later, even in the 80s, I tended to like things like Nathaniel Dusk, which was Gene Colan detective series. I just preferred that kind of stuff to the superheroes. That stuff never
Daniel Dust
grabbed me. I liked comic books that weren't about superheroes. I just never.
Sure.
I went through a period, when I was a 10-year-old, maybe, that I was into really into superheroes and Star Trek and stuff. But then I got more into Arnold Schwarzenegger, and liked action that didn't have super costumes.
Yeah.
So you never felt like you wanted to contribute to the big yearly crossover?
I have contributed to a lot of those. They used to. I just saw in the bookstore recently a Secret Wars reprint or something like that. I was surprised that they reprinted it because that stuff was done on such a tight schedule that everybody who was in the office would be drafted to work on. Like if you were just walking down the hall, I don't know who was credited with the art on those, but it was always somebody like Many Hands or Diverse Hands.
So you worked on Secret Wars?
Yeah. Wow. I just found one of those pages the other day. I was going through my stuff. It's a terrible book, though. My favorite was there was like an Olympic, it was like a superhero Olympic story that they did around the same time, where all the superheroes in the Marvel Universe had to have this contest. Some kind of cosmic prize or something. But the funny thing was, it was such a long series that they had, at some point, the writer had forgotten what side one of the characters was on. So the thing actually ended in a tie.
Oh,
okay, and Spider-Man wins. And it turned out he was on the wrong team or something. And that thing was just really shoddily put together at the time. Back in the good old 80s.
Exactly.
What was the question? I got totally sidetracked. You were asking if I wanted to contribute to those things.
Yeah.
Which I have.
I guess the question is, will you continue to want to contribute to anything like that? After going through that one, I guess.
Well, I think that there was my thing is just through the 80s and 90s, mostly in the 90s, is that there just was no variety in comics. And the thing that attracted me to the field later, because I read comics when I was young, and then, you know, got out of it whenever people usually stop reading comics. And when I was in high school, a friend of mine named Robert Simpson, who's now an editor over at Dark Horse, kept telling me, you should read comic books. And I said, oh, no, comic books are for kids and they're dumb. And he would point me out. And so, yeah, he was telling me, you're reading the wrong comics. There's some new stuff that's pretty good. Guys like Howard Chaykin and Frank Miller were doing interesting things, and all the raw stuff, and Fantagraphics was, just starting up. So they had some interesting books, and that was what interested me about comics. And there were companies like Pacific Comics and First Comics and all these weird other things. Oh, one of the comics I used to like as a kid was, I liked all the DC Ghost comics, like Unexpected and House of Secrets and things like that, And I was into EC Comics, too. So I like a variety. And it's nice to see a bigger variety now.
Oh, yeah.
Than ever.
Now I think it's tremendous. Between all these independent...
I think it's better than it's ever been.
All the small press publishing. I think, it's just a diverse field.
I think that's the biggest, most important thing in, if you're going to expand your market, is that you have to have a variety of, stuff. It's like if you went to, a record store and they only had one type of music.
Right.
And there are stores that do that, that specialize only in jazz or whatever, but you want to be able to take your whole family to the record store, and you buy a kid record, and your wife buys a Marvin Gaye, and you buy, rock and roll or whatever,
Exactly. Well, I think you also see some of that too now. We were just at, unfortunately Julio couldn't go, but we were at San Diego at Comic-Con, and a lot of people there said too how much even the convention itself has grown to a huge scale over the years because of the popularity. And obviously we see it in most recent years with a lot of the films that are out, how much the film industry is latching on to the comic book.
Which, helps.
Exactly.
Do you feel there are maybe too many conventions going on now?
I only go to one. I have to go to more.
Really?
Because I'm a publisher now.
Really?
I have to start showing up at these things.
Oh, so you totally enjoy the experience?
I only do, I only do one or two conventions a year. This year I only did San Diego. Last year I only did the San Francisco one in San Diego. And for the longest time, when I was just working for DC, because when you're working for somebody else, and I already got my Plastic Man check, so it's their problem now to get rid of them. No, it is. And there are people whose job it is to now sell them. My job is done.
Of course.
They paid me to draw it, and I don't care if they ever sell them or not.
Right.
But in the case of the self-publishing, if I don't sell them, nobody's selling them.
Exactly.
So I really find that if I don't show up somewhere, the books don't move. So.
And you literally do it all yourself. I mean, moving it out there and getting it to the store.
And what I you were asking about there being too many conventions. One thing I like about today, more than any other time, is the fact that there are ways to sell your stuff. Maybe 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, whatever medium you wanted to work in, you had to deal with some sort of corporate monopoly. Like if you wanted to publish a book, or if you wanted to put out a DVD or a record or something, you had to, if you wanted to be on TV, you had to go to one of the three networks, for example. There were only three TV networks, and you had to work on their terms, and they would say, this is what we're going to pay you, and this is the agreement, and it was non-negotiable. And same thing with comic books, they would say. There were only three comic book companies, and they'd say, here's the deal, we're going to pay you this much, we own everything, if we make any toys, you don't get any of the money, and we're not going to give you your art back, and take it or leave it. And there was nowhere else to go.
Yeah, exactly.
But now, if you don't want to take that deal, you can actually go out there and sell your book on the internet if it comes to that. You can just go from door to door.
Right.
Sell them out of a truck if you have to.
So, I hate to put out this question, because I always hated it when people used to ask me this in high school and college.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to ask you, where do you ultimately see yourself in about 5 to 10 years, as far as the career-wise goes? Yep, exactly.
Doing more of the same. I like that question.
Yeah?
I spend a lot of time thinking about where I'm going to be in 5 to 10 years. Yeah, I I'm going to continue publishing, and we're doing animation now. And
oh, nice.
I had actually maybe wanted to ask if you were going to maybe get into some sort of animation.
Yeah, I'm getting into all the that stuff. That's the other thing is that when I'm working for these big companies, they call all the shots. So if, like, if, you know, we'd like to see some Plastic Man toys, for example, but it's not up to me.
Yeah.
You know, so we're, you know, you try and get that happening, but you have to have a lot of meetings and work it through the system. And, you know, I'd like to see a Plastic Man TV show. And I'm trying to, you know, talk to people, you know.
Get the buzz going.
And Warner Brothers Animation and stuff, but that's, you have to go through channels, whereas I wanted to see, you know, Baker's toys, so we're just making them.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
Right.
You know, I don't have to have any meetings.
Exactly. You confer with yourself and
everything. I bounce it off some people, see if anybody would buy it, you know. Right. You know, but that's about as much as I need is, you know, if I have an idea, I show it to people to see if it's a commercial idea. You know, will anybody read this book?
Someone buy.
Yeah. And if people think it's funny, then I publish it.
Then, with that in mind, anything that you can share with our listeners, upcoming projects or things on the horizon?
We're doing more of the Bakers, because people really like that. That's, for people who don't know, stories about my family.
Yeah.
It was a feature that was in the cartoonist books, which I published. And it turned out to be the most popular feature. People were writing in and telling me that they really liked to see more of those characters. So we're doing a lot more with those characters and more Nat Turners and more of everything.
Awesome. Great. When's the next Nat Turner out?
It's scheduled for October, but it'll probably be closer to September.
Oh, okay.
I'm doing this weird thing in the Diamond catalog, the previews catalog. You know that one?
Yeah.
The ads are very expensive, full-page ads.
I'm sure.
So I'm putting two books on each full-page ad.
Oh, yeah.
So one comes out a little bit early and one comes out a little bit late.
Right. Nice. So no, I'm looking forward to
it. So I only have to buy an ad every 2 months instead of spending $2,000 every month.
You got
to
be creative. Got to do it.
That's an entrepreneur right there.
That's right.
Thinking ahead.
Well, Kyle, I just wanted to thank you again for taking a few minutes to sit down with us and talk to us about some of your work. I wanted to actually congratulate you again on your Eisner Award.
Oh, okay. One thing I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
I just sent the Bakers to the printer.
Oh, great.
And it's a little late. No, it's just a little late.
So those that you're looking for, right?
Well, here's the thing. So the big thing is that it makes them returnable. The distributor is upset because the books used to be non-returnable, but if you turn them in late, they're returnable.
Oh.
So I'm very focused on making sure that no one returns these books.
Exactly.
So I just wanted to mention to everyone listening that the reason the book was late is because I added 16 pages. So it's actually a better book.
That's right.
There's more.
More for your dollar.
Yeah, exactly. It's more for your $3. It's 48 pages for $3,
nice.
Which
that's
very
good.
Which
is another thing. Just
so it's not late for a bad reason. It's late for a very good.
Same
reason.
Same thing with Nat Turner. We
same thing with Nat Turner.
That
so, yeah, over the last two books,
cover
I've managed to throw in 32 pages for free. So if you buy those two books, you get it's the equivalent of a free comic.
And it's all art, folks.
It's
go buy
stuff.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good stuff.
So I just had to mention that because I have to make sure those books don't come back.
Exactly.
Okay.
So run to the store, buy the
Bakers. Buy it now. And if you're interested in seeing more of Kyle's work, you can check out his website at www.kylebaker.com. Thanks again for joining us on Comic News Insider.
Okay.
Well, that was our interview with Kyle Baker.
That was quick.
Yeah. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed holding the interview.
Mm-hmm.
It was good stuff. So make sure you tune in. We still have yet more interviews coming up soon in future podcasts. So make sure you tune in to some of that stuff as it comes up.
Yes, please. And as always, we would love to hear from you guys out there. If you'd like to send a comment about the show, or if you have some inside information, email us at comicnewsinsider@yahoo.com.
That's right. And to get all your comic news in one spot, make sure you check out the Comics Podcast Network at www.comicspodcast.com. Thanks again for checking out Comic News Insider. See ya.
See ya.